are making to look further at the challenges of aligning HTML with XML. So Tim, whenever you're ready.
Thanks. There was a this is a topic which has been discussed long on the lists and the meetings like this, long and deep and hard, and where's full screen? And it tends to be pretty much of a rat hole because there are lots of related issues which are intertwined, in fact, in quite a complicated way, both technically and historically. But what happened recently is that TV Raman of Google sent a message to the AC list saying, "Hey, you know, we should look at this issue and we should see if we can do what we need to do about it." He said, "Fix it." He said, "Please form a task force to look at this problem that the HTML stacks and XML stacks are diverging." So at the end of this, the slides are on the web. There is a set of links from the back, including a link from the last slide, so you don't have to go searching for it. On the web, there's a link to Raman's message. And there is a serious need for, there's a whole community of people who have been traditionally using XML tools in order to produce their websites. And sometimes they have been using XML tools to produce their websites. They've produced XHTML, which sometimes they've produced XML, which has been in the HTML namespace, and they have often served it out as just as text HTML MIME type. And they've used, sometimes benefited from the fact that all the stuff was in XML, because they've actually then, when they've done an analysis of their site or they've gone back and scraped their own site, they've done it using XML tools. So there's a community of people who are used to using XML tools, and meanwhile, the definition of HTML5 has divorced itself from XML by the trunk, if you like, has divorced itself from XML. And meanwhile, there is a piece which explains that actually you can serialize this stuff in XML, but most web pages out there aren't. You can't straightforwardly parse. And so, if you like, one way to define a goal for what this work which Raman asked for is that, perhaps that I suppose I'd reformulate it in two ways. One is to see how much power we can give to that community who do use XML tools to manage their websites. And the other is to look at the future and find out whether, by planning the architecture, whether the divergence can be decreased, whether we can actually minimize the divergence and perhaps with some convergence later on through as we go through history. Now, what I'm not going to do, by the way, is go into the details of the technical arguments. The tag has gone into a number of them. There have been lots of gone into in various different lists. There have been lots of suggestions about how one could tweak HTML a bit or tweak XML a bit in order to make things better. Basically, this is just an announcement that we are going to make this task force. We'll have some people from the tag and some people not from the tag. Some people know who they are, and we'll. I'm not announcing who's on the task force at this point. I'll just, for those who are new to this area, there are various areas in which XML and HTML5 have diverged, the various different dimensions. There are some basic syntax things, the fact that an HTML parser will cope with somebody starting a bold tag, starting an italic, and then finishing the bold and then finishing the italic, which happens on some websites out there. But and the HTML spec explains what to do to turn that into a nested DOM. But obviously an XML parser isn't going to do that. So that is, if you like, the among the hairiest of things when it comes to look at this divergence. There's some tricky little things in that you can see what looks like this, you can see what looks like the same web page to two parsers, to the XML parser and the HTML parser. You can and you expect it to have the same effect, but actually there's some rules inside HTML which that, for example, the famous one is t-body, that if you have a table, that a t-body element is inserted by the HTML parser, so that you don't, so that, yes, the thing will parse, but and yes, it will display the same as a web page, but if you write a script which goes down through the DOM, it will pop up, it looks for the first tr in the inside the table element. It'll actually miss it because there aren't any trs inside the table. The trs have all got stuck inside a t-body. So the little tricky little things like that. The whole large, I suppose, the centroid of this thing is around the difference in namespaces. The fact that there aren't namespaces in HTML, even when you put SVG, as in current spec, if you put SVG in, you can put SVG in, and typically the suggestion is that you don't put any namespaces for that. Even though in XHTML in the XML world, there's been an SVG namespace, there is an SVG namespace, the SVG folks might expect to see their tags in that namespace. So it's a complicated issue about exactly how you parse and what, and that in fact you make, a syntax which does not have namespaces, and then you generate a DOM which does have namespaces. There have been suggestions that, for example, one of the tricks you could do is to say that for a particular MIME type, we're going to say that for new MIME types which use XML, we should be able to say, we use XML, but for this MIME type, your parser always has this set of default namespace prefixes set up in advance. And this would actually save bytes across the network, of course, particularly, which might be useful, particularly for mobile devices, because you know every time you get one of these documents, we're going to get a whole set of namespaces. You're going to have, it might declare HTML and SVG and MathML, for example, namespaces by default. So that's, you know, that's specified, burned into the code, so that doesn't have to be sent across the net every time. But there are lots and lots of technical questions are much more complicated, and there have been lots of discussions around that area. I put in a completely separate bullet the syntax issue that XML does not, XML requires quotes and attributes. Don't ask me why. Well, I've heard various people explain why at the time they decided that, unlike HTML, XML would require you to put quotes around attributes. Well, people making web pages generally don't bother to stick those in unless they're deliberately making their page XML so that they can put it through XML tools. I put that relatively far down the list because it was it's such a silly little problem. If you like, it's very easy to see how to map from one to the other. In some of the other cases, it is not at all obvious how to map from one to the other. The last one I mentioned is behind the namespace thing is the whole question of distributed extensibility. And I put that at the bottom because it's such a big issue. This question of distributed extensibility, what does distributed extensibility mean anyway? Distributed extensibility is the name, sort of the tagline, which has been given to this issue. The need is that if one working group makes a specification, that a sub-community who are using that specification, for example, are using HTML, can use HTML and put in some extra tags. There's various different levels, size of. I'll keep do my slides in order and talk more about distributed extensibility later. Let me first mention that a really important stake in this ground is the polyglot document. edited by Elliot Graff. Is Elliot here? So, yes. So this document describes, if you want to avoid, if you want to do this thing of generating what is an XML document and put it on the web as though it is both an XML document and an HTML document, there are some whole bunch of traps which you have to avoid, and this polyglot markup, HTML compatible XML documents spec, just tells you what they all are. It tells you, it constrains the syntax. It tells you sometimes you have to lowercase most of the time, but just here you should have an uppercase. It tells you that certain things that you should just avoid because you can't, like no script, you just shouldn't put in there. It gives you little, so it gives you tricks. And in practice, if you're trying to do this, sometimes there are, sometimes in fact there are choices. So for example, with T-body, to take an arbitrary example, you can either be very careful always to put a T-body table body tag into your within every table, or you can write CSS and scripts which don't care about it, or you can not use scripts at all, for example, so that you're not actually worrying about the DOM at all. So the various choices, and so polyglot document, I guess, in some cases makes some choices. But mostly it's just, it's a very useful listing. And in fact, I find, for example, the stuff I write on my design issues, they're all polyglot documents. They have been for ages because I like to be able to, sometimes I forget to actually go through and check that and tidy them as XML. But in general, I reckon to keep them as XML, and I reckon to be able to put RDFA in them, and I reckon to be able to go through my, I like to be able to go through the RDFA and pull them out in principle into, and generate a manifest from with all the RDFA pulled out from all of those things. So polyglot is a really important part of this scene. So, distributed extensibility is so polyglot, if you like, is a list of all the little niggly syntax differences and funny quirks in the HTML5 spec that you have to avoid. Distributed extensibility isn't just a quirk. It's, if you like, to a certain extent, a difference in values, in what people felt were important things to optimize for. At one end of the scale, you're optimizing for interoperability. You throw extensibility out because you say, look, if anybody's going to extend this spec, if they're going to make a language which includes this language but has got other parts in it too, then that language is not going to be interoperable with the mainstream. And so we will lose 100% interoperability. So to get 100% interoperability, you have just one language, and it is controlled in one place. Now, the other side of the scale, you say, look, the web has been built on extensibility. HTTP is just, it's a mass of headers where people invent things by inventing new headers, and they can do that without pretty much asking anybody, and they can then get a bit of consensus behind it. And then they can build tools that will send those headers and tools that will receive those headers, and bit by bit, new functionality will creep into the system. And that is how most of HTTP has arisen, and that's how a lot of internet protocols have arisen, and it's how a lot of HTML, of course, has arisen in the past. I'd like to look at some different examples to show an important scale here. One example of extensibility is adding SVG to HTML. SVG has always been something which ought to have been incorporated into HTML. We should have had for years a spec which says, by the way, these are the places inside the HTML structure where you can put SVG. Now what's happened is SVG has been adopted by HTML5. If the HTML5 spec now tells you how to put SVG in there. And rather than take the HTML, the SVG spec and just say, well, there's a spec and use the XML namespaces, what's happened is that you can put SVG in, just you can put an SVG tag in by itself. Now, SVG is being incorporated in the discussion about how to do it is happening within the HTML working group itself. Now, another example is RDFA. RDFA, the discussion about how to incorporate RDFA, this is tags for putting data into explicit data with explicit semantics into web pages, it happened in a different working group. RDFA had its own working group. And it's the target is that it should be an extension to HTML, whether XML formatted or HTML5 formatted. But the design authority for the extension is a different group. It talks to the HTML working group, but it's a different group. It's within W3C, though. So there's a framework for coordination. Now, if you look at Facebook markup language, that's something which you use if you make Facebook applications, and it's defined by Facebook. And they don't they define it by themselves. We know them. It's a big community, so we found out about it. They use namespaces. They didn't come and ask us. They didn't really want, they didn't let the check it out with the HTML5 working group. But they are quite a well-known example. There are lots and lots of examples where people are doing things in local experiments, maybe just locally, and particularly in product. And for example, if an editor saves information, HTML editor saves information about its current state, or the state of the window, or something, or versioning information. People go all sorts of things. People put into HTML, and those local projects are developed within a specific community, perhaps. A particular community of practice which doesn't really want to have to come and check with W3C before it does it. So the distributed extensibility argument is there are lots and lots of people out there who need to be able to do extensions, and they should be supported in that we should give them the hooks. And with XML, they have the hooks because they just have to make their own namespace. A namespace is a URL which has got a domain name in it. All you need is a domain name, and you can make an HTTP URL, and you can make a namespace, and then you can make your own extension within the XML system. But the HTML side, people have said, look, these URLs are too horrible and long-winded and complicated to, we'd rather not have them in the syntax. So, but the important thing to note about this is that there are is that there's a scale that sometimes extensibility goes from the very distributed to the pretty much centralized. And the way that the HTML5 spec itself functions is there's just one place you go to. So obviously, maybe I should have said zero. There obviously is the extensibility of putting video tags into HTML, perhaps, where obviously that's happening. Obviously the design authority is the HTML working group. The philosophical question of to what extent you value the needs of the people down the list as opposed to the needs of the people at the top of the list has been one of the things which divided the community and has driven the namespaces. So that's just my quick overview. There will be so the tags discuss this. There are this is not a short-term thing, so it will not necessarily be expected to produce comments for the last call. Maybe it will. I don't know. Goal: maximize the ability of people using XML tools to produce and use websites, but also to try to look for a future path which will minimize the damage. I think what I respect Raman for in sending that mail is that he raised the temperature here. He pointed out, guys, this is important. Everything we build has two stacks. The times we do that, times when we don't do that. When we do that, whenever we have two stacks which are divergent and have to keep connecting in the middle, it's pain for engineering. It makes it more difficult to develop and things. And sort of, this is not Raman's words. These are my my feelings about about two stacks. But he's pointed out that this is important, and so we should look at it. I mean, we have a large number of people in the groups who are involved at the low level. Sometimes we need to pop up and step back and look at where we're going and figure out whether this is right. Thank you. Those are the links.
Thank you, Tim. Yanina, if you could start coming up while we take a question or two, that would be very helpful. Thank you. Yes, here at the front microphone.
Daniel Glassman, Disruptive Innovations. If you recall correctly, XML was built from the very beginning to solve the holes and gaps of SGML. SGML had big issues that we could not cope with to make SGML. I have the gut feeling that what you call divergence is in fact the emergence of XML 2.0. And a new XML where namespaces are less important, where the small holes, the small divergences that you highlighted, like unquoted attributes and stuff like that, are just the future. And it's possibly the right time to start thinking again about new work on XML and the future of XML, because XML, as it is now, is probably not the best thing for the web as we use it on a daily basis.
Thanks.
XML 2. Yes.
Before you mentioned distributed extensibility, and you talked about using XML tools to process HTML and creating sites, I think that's already a solved problem if you don't focus too much on the XML parser and focus on the tools that the parser feeds into. So I've implemented an HTML5 parser that exposes an API like an XML parser and that coerces the document tree into an infoset. So you can, for example, connect it to an XSLT processor, and the XSLT processor doesn't know that it's not talking to an XML parser. And there's also an HTML serializer you can put in the other end of the pipeline. So I think this XML tool problem is a solved problem. So you put an HTML parser at the start of the pipeline that coerces the document tree into an XML infoset. Then you have your XML tools, and then you have a serializer that takes an XML infoset and serializes it as HTML.
Any other comments?
So we're going to have just a minute here of swapping computers because we've got a slow network. While we're doing that, thank you. Let me briefly introduce our next speaker, who, in fact,